Hey, we're back for another episode of the Libby Delusion podcast. And our first episode with Chris was so popular that we asked him back for a second visit. And Chris, do you want to introduce yourself? And we can dive into, we have a lot of similar interests. If you didn't hear the first episode, I would go back and listen to that one. But Chris, go ahead and introduce yourself. Your introduction will be different this time.
Sure. It will be. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for having me on again. So I'm Chris Schwab. I'm just a small local business owner. I started running a cleaning company about 10 years ago, and I figured out how to run it remotely. So I took my business based in Washington, D.C., and I started to run it from Japan so I could go be with my wife. And these past 10 years, I've been building remote businesses and remote teams for myself, but also for other people in the house cleaning industry primarily. So I've run a cleaning company, I've acquired some, sold some, and I've also ran a virtual assistant agency dedicated specifically to the cleaning industry, which helps people onboard VAs, but also teaches them how to delegate and how to get out of the day-to-day and into a more balanced business and a more balanced life. So there's a few different themes that I work with people on around balance, around delegation, around automation. Today, we're going to be talking a little bit about systems, but those are some of the themes and things that I'm known for is the whole remote cleaning business thing, if you will. So that's me. In full disclosure, this podcast we're doing, there's been a bit of a shift since our last conversation with Libby. I've actually exited one of my cleaning companies, as well as my virtual assistant agency over the past few months. So I'm a little bit of an in-betweener right now between projects.
So I love that. Before we kind of get started into the simple systems, what you're up to, I want to know, you know, how does it feel when you sell a business? After you're like, it's a lot of work kind of getting it ready to sell, getting ready to exit. What's that feeling? What are you doing right now with your time? And what's the feeling that you have?
It's different every time. I've exited four different businesses now, and every single time the feeling is very different. The first time that you do it, even if it's very casual between friends, is extremely stressful because it's a very large legal deal. And there's a lot of ways things that can go wrong. I'm a very organized guy, so I made detailed checklists for every stage of the buying process, every stage of the transition process, every part of the deal. And I basically did it for the buyers each time. But there's a lot of anxiety that comes with that the first time, just because it's like anything, right? It's like trying a new sport for the first time. You know you're going to suck at it. So there's a lot of kind of free-floating emotion. I would say there's a big mix of anxiety, excitement, and wondering what you're going to do with your time. So in my case, I didn't have to wonder what I had to do with my time until I just sold my VA agency back in April, because I always had another business to fall back on where I would default to spending my time to that thing. Now I just have a small consulting business, and suddenly I'm finding out how lazy I am, because I'm not managing a team anymore. I'm learning that internal motivation has to come again, right? External motivation, mm-hmm. There's problems, there's fires you have to deal with. You're just in business owner mode when you have a team. But when you go back to a business of one, it's all internal again. So for me right now, what I'm feeling is like I need a kick in the butt to go and earn some money, right? So it feels really good. It feels like a major accomplishment, but it does feel like I have to do something again now. You know, I don't want to sit and twiddle my thumbs is kind of how I feel.
Yeah. You know, I was in SAS Academy for a long time, and SAS Academy is Dan Martell's mastermind group. And the whole basis around it was called the ideal exit. And I really I was like, I'm not selling my business. Like that's the kind of the mentality I had at the beginning. But the more time I spent inside of SAS Academy, I learned that if you set up your business with the ideal exit in mind, you actually have a really great running business. And yeah. So I don't want to sell any of my businesses, but I'm kind of always thinking that in the back of my mind now, making sure that it's all set up with the ideal exit in mind. And before we started talking, I loved what you said about, you know, you've had multiple businesses, and when you start one, you always start one with a like an end goal in mind, whether that's to like help you buy a house or, you know, something personal that's going to help kind of contribute. I think that gives you that motivation to get that kick in the butt that you're looking for.
If I may add something onto that, which is something that's not maybe talked about so much in terms of selling your business, is loss of identity. So I've found my identity lost kind of two different times in my business journey. One exit, one not. The first time was when I moved to Japan. I'd actually started my cleaning company with the specific goal of having a remote business so that I could then move to a different country and then be with my wife and earn an income. I achieved that, but when I achieved that, I didn't set a new long-term goal in mind for my cleaning business for a couple of years. And at that time, it languished because I've grown sizable companies. I feel comfortable saying that, but I've never been a profit focused as a number one priority type of guy. It's very important, but it's always like priority number two or three. And so for me, when I had achieved this major goal, I'd actually stopped growing my business because I'd lost all the motivation because I'd achieved the goal. I didn't set any new goal. And this languishing period lasted a couple of years before I figured it out and before I added a new goal that I actually emotionally connected to with the cleaning business, right? And then it started to grow again, and then it started to come back. But I also found the same thing when I exited my businesses, is that I found a loss of meaning and identity because I'd so tightly wound my identity and my brand and what I am and who I am to those businesses that exiting out of them was a weird feeling because you're still in that view of yourself, even though you're no longer the owner. So this is something that I found with exiting the businesses too. It's not a bad thing. It's just an adjustment to a different period of your life, but it's an intense feeling at times where you go, whoa, I'm not the owner of my own team anymore. Who am I? So just something to add on.
Yeah, I love that topic. We were fortunate enough to have, I believe his last name is Campbell, Patrick Campbell, come and talk to us. He was the prior owner of Paddle. And if you don't know what Paddle is, it is kind of like Stripe, but for SaaS companies. And he had an ideal exit. The amount of money was just astronomical that he got. But even with all that money, he showed us a lifeline of his loss of identity and how it happened when he sold Paddle. And like, there was no amount of money that was going to, like, all of a sudden, like, you're an expert and everybody wants to, like, is congratulating you. And then, you know, then you're like, all of a sudden people are turning to you for money. And then, you know, he just went through the whole timeline. And that was one of his biggest things, was the loss of identity that he went through. Cause then he's like, I didn't have anything to do. And you think, he was like, you think you're going to like go do these things like a vacation and, or like, I'm going to go backpack across Europe. And he's like, but it all ends really fast.
Yeah. It does.
And then you're just back. Like, what do I do? And then, you know, I saw a speaker talk about this topic and they said like the majority of exits, you know, most entrepreneurs go start another business. It's some crazy thing, like 98% of people who sell or exit start another business because they can't just be still.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so true. And it's something that what you just said is actually what's internally going on with my mind right now, is what I want to do. A big part of what I talk about with people, and I'm trying to take my own medicine here right now, is about work-life balance. It's about meaning in your life. It's about the other things that your business facilitates. Because often as entrepreneurs, our business becomes our entire life. And when we look back 5 years later, we've lost friendships, we've lost hobbies, we've lost everything else except the business often. This is very common. And when you are in a period between businesses, it's a special moment where you can reevaluate and you can readjust what you want a new business to be. So you might go off and start a new business, but if you can pause before you do that, it's a very powerful moment where you can reorient the way that you exist in the world and what you want out of your life in totality, rather than just what you want out of entrepreneurship. So it's interesting to hear Patrick talking about that too, because it sounds like we're going through the same journey there.
Yeah. So let's talk about, you sold it. I want to lead back to the original reason that we scheduled this call with each other was... simple systems, right? Simple, scalable systems, micro playbooks, as I call it. Do you feel that like the way you structured your business, the simple systems at scale helped you, one, get more money for your business, and then also exit that business or make the business more valuable, which is get more money? But I want to dive into what's your version of a simple system? How can you help? So many people cannot comprehend it. There's this comprehension, like people will send me like a playbook. They're like, could you look at the playbook? I'm like, no, it's 15 pages long. it's too long. I'm not going to read it. Yeah. So I'd love to know how before we segue into that simple systems, how's it helped you exit those businesses?
A lot to say. I'm a talker. I'll try and keep it short. I'll work backwards. Okay. So how did it help me sell the businesses? When I listed each of my businesses for sale, I had already a process for everything in place. It was not a long multi-step process, but it was a clear, repeatable process that was either done by a machine or a person that gave a consistent result. That's all you need. You don't need some 100 multi-step decision tree system. Like that's just an unimaginable thing that like a giant corporation needs, but a small local business doing less than a couple million dollars does not need any sort of complexity beyond a few steps. So I had a simple checklist basically for each area of the business that was repeatable, that was packaged up in a confidential information memorandum, which you can send to a buyer once they've signed an NDA with you and sent you a letter of intent. You can start to give them more specifics on their business because they want to start to do their due diligence. Well, I had pre-packaged a lot of that so that they could view it right away. They could see that the marketing jargon that I was using to market my business for sale actually had depth behind it. Because a lot of people use the word system now and they know they need systems, but it's become a buzzword with no depth. So you have to add actual depth to that when you're trying to sell the business. You have to show them that it's systemized. You have to show them that it's a process that's repeatable, and you have to show them that it's easy to understand. Because if it's complex, they're going to get scared from that and think that when they transition as the owner, they can't handle it all. So you have to make it easy to understand and repeatable for the new person transitioning in. So what I did was I packaged them up into a very neat bundle, and I did a Loom video walking through each system in the business. And I showed them, this is how you do this. This is how you do that. If you follow this, this is the result that you will get each time. This is what the office manager's job does. This is what the lead cleaner's job is, right? So I gave an overview for every part of the business that they could go through and watch before they had actually bought the business. And this is, of course, more information than most will give, but it's a very reassuring thing for a buyer to see that you're actually opening up everything to them up front. So it helped me sell each of my businesses because they were very impressed with the level of detail available to them during the due diligence process, even before we started the final contract versions. So it was a huge part of the sale process in each of the sales that I did.
I love that. I love that either a machine does it or a person does it, right? Because that's an automation or software. Before we go into your, you know, the notes that you made for me for simple systems for our listeners, when you're starting this for people, because this is so many people reach out to me and they're like, Libby, I don't even know where to start. Like, I have writer's block. I don't know how to do it. I have my own ways of suggesting to them how to get started, but I would love to know, how do you recommend they just get started?
Sure.
I want to see if they align.
Yeah, it's a very simple way. There's a software, it's a checklist software called process.street. That's the URL. It's not .com, it's process.st. If you go to that website, the pricing is updated because they added AI features, but if you email the support team, they have a $97 a month plan. They just don't highlight it on the pricing page anymore. I've used this software for a number of years. What it is you have an account and you have a repeatable checklist that you can create for a process that you need in your business, which can be automatically ran. And what this is called is each time you have, for example, if you have an onboarding process for hiring a new cleaner, you would have a checklist with each step of the hiring process in Process Street's hiring checklist. And each step, you would have the information that needed to be collected or the stage that the applicant is on to be worked through and you would tick off each stage, and each applicant would have their own mini checklist that would be repeated when a new applicant applies. Now, of course, there's great hiring software like Woot Recruit, but I'm just using this as an easy example to explain how to use it. You want to use a simple checklist software like process.street, which will allow you step-by-step to build your own process for each task or each system in your business, which you can then either automate or hand off to a person. But this is a very good, simple starting step, is to use a checklist software rather than an automation tool where you have to play around with Zapier and you have to play around with a bunch of software code, but to use a simple checklist software instead, where you build it as you go along, and then you can improve it later on if you want. But this would be my initial step for you, or for anyone listening, is to use a type of software like this, where you build it as you go.
So I love your feedback. I always tell people, first, you got to start documenting it. Whether you write it on a piece of paper or a Google Doc, you got to get it down. So like your simple software checklist is that, just get it down. So many people want to run to an automation software, but for me, that is the last step, because you don't even know if that process will work. Like, you don't even know if, because if it's, I always say, like, you don't want to automate chaos. So you want to make sure that it is the process. Those are the steps. They are now repeatable. You've done it. It's kind of like, you know, in software, oh my gosh, I forgot. There's a train going by, so we can hear the train. I'm definitely in the country. You know, it is a proof of concept. So in software, we call it a proof of concept. Before you make this thing, you have to make sure that you have a proof of concept. And I love it when you said, don't automate it yet. Like, just get it down, a simple checklist. And I agree. Because when you run by the software, most people give up because, one, they haven't captured it yet. And two, then the software is overwhelming and they don't even know how to automate it yet.
Oh, yeah. That's a big one.
Me and my husband fight over this. Because I'll ask him for something and he'll go and like automatically create some automations, write some script. And I'm like, no, we just need to try it first. What if we don't even like it?
Oh yeah. So this is the main source of the entrepreneur's marriage fight. I see. That's funny. Okay. So to hammer this point home that you're making, I have simple rules that I work on with my students when they're implementing systems. There's different ways, like there's done with you or done for you. I'm a done with you coach rather than done for you service. There are done for you services where you can pay a Zapier automation expert or a Go High Level guy for their Go High Level snapshot, and they'll just copy their automations for you and they'll say it's great. Actually, I think that's a suboptimal approach, and I think it's really probably going to hurt you in the long run to do that. I prefer a done with you.
Well, most people don't like it. They bought someone else's system. And
they bought a box is what they bought.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
And they don't like it, or they don't know how to change it or make it their own. So we're totally on the same page with the done with you.
Right. And even worse is it's not portable. So I have a couple of different rules when I'm implementing systems with my students that might be helpful to impart today. Obviously, this is like pared down just for a short interview, but one of the rules I have is simplicity over complexity. We have to remember that we're not actually small businesses. We're a micro business. If you look at the definition of a small business, it's way bigger than you think. And most of us here do not qualify for that definition. It's up to something like 500 employees, right? So it's I forget exactly what it is, but it's like way bigger than us. We have to remember we're a micro business. We don't need a complex system for literally anything in our businesses until you're up to mid seven figures. A multi-step process, yes, but a complex system you absolutely do not need. Most simple processes that you can write down and follow directions on, or simple automations, are sufficient. So you want to avoid the systems optimization trap that I see a lot of marketers marketing to business owners in our Facebook groups here, saying, I'm a Go high level expert. I have all this knowledge. If you pay me $1,500, I'll set up this great thing for you. I don't want to like throw anyone under the bus here, but I would urge against doing that at first. So keeping it simple and taking a, well, I'm in Japan, so I kind of think of a craftsman mindset here, but taking a Japanese craftsman's type of approach to building your systems one by one, rather than like a systems engineer type of approach where you're trying to optimize everything. That's the type of
That's my
approach that
husband.
I take. Yeah.
Systems engineer. He's an engineer. I'm like, oh, you just
Ah,
described
that's
my
why.
husband.
Yeah, that explains it. He's coming from a different world. So one of the rules is really just simplicity over complexity. And the other is portability is paramount. So when you buy someone else's system or you buy into their ecosystem, whether that's a booking software or something else, it's not portable. Often you can't take it with you. You can't export your contacts or your questions or your automations. You have to build it from scratch when you want to take it with you. So having your processes written down, having that information stored on your server somewhere is paramount to your business's survivability. There are entire softwares, like, not to name names, but there was a booking software a couple months ago that was down almost for weeks that crushed people's businesses. Yes. And they could, these are people running multi-million dollar companies. They were at this booking software's mercy, losing tens of thousands of dollars a week in revenue because their system wasn't portable. So having a portable written down checklist, it doesn't have to be Process Street. That's just the tool I mentioned on the call. But having your system be portable such that you can take it with you and very quickly set it up in another software is crucial as a security measure for your business's sustainability. And this is something that people don't think about a lot because you only typically change a system or a software once every few years. But when you need to change it, you have got to be able to actually get out of the ecosystem that you're in and into the new one safely. So portability is a crucial rule to keep in mind when you're setting up your system.
I have so much feedback on that whole topic. I felt so bad for my like our cleaning business industry peers when that happened. And they were just paralyzed. Like I have a great friend, I coach her. She's just like, Libby, I don't know what to do. And like we helped build something out. Like I gave her some tips and she built something out on Trello that worked for her. Luckily, she could get in and export everything in between it being down to even just get her customers' contact information. And as a software owner, like you can't first, like, I don't even know what they did. I don't even want to get into it. But as a cleaning business owner, we're held hostage by software sometimes. And I love this topic. We learned it back when the hurricane hit us. Because we didn't even have enough internet to upload our CRM, we learned to start downloading exports of our customers as a protocol so that we at least had access to our own customer list if something happened. So it was the opposite side. It was like a natural disaster. I didn't have enough internet to upload my software because it was heavy, my CRM, but we could communicate through email. But if you don't have their emails, then it does you no good. So it wasn't the software's fault. For us, it was we didn't have proper internet when Hurricane Ian hit us. They had to bring in those towers, and it was very minimal internet. And so, for me, that's one of my rules too. All of my simple systems, micro playbooks, are housed in our own software that we built, that we own. I don't resell it. And I've really been drawn to Google Workspace more and more because they now have the app script that you can create your own automations, very simple. It's a little bit more for a backup, for storage, for things, for like, because I even learned my lesson with my CRM. We had all of our email copy in there, but then like, what if you want to move that, like you said, move that process over? So we have duplicates of everything in Google Workspace backed up of all of our like reels, like the TikTok thing. This is not even a system, but when TikTok went down, so many of our cleaning friends had housed all of their trainings on TikToks and they were losing their minds. They're like, oh my God, what am I going to do? I'm like, all of our reels and copy are backed up in Google Drive and organized in a spreadsheet.
Way to do it. Yep. Everything in two
Because
places.
even if you put it on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, you don't own it. You don't own that platform. If it goes down, if someone hacks your account, like that's a whole nother topic. And if you don't have your information backed up, you don't own any of it.
This is the way that, yes, Libby, it's very similar for me. So what I have is I have the originals on my desktop. I have a online backup client called Proton Drive. It's part of the Proton Mail ecosystem that will store everything in the cloud so I can access it when I'm traveling. And then I have the actual things within whatever software I'm using. So there's always an original copy that's accessible. And if I can't access one of those three locations, well, I'm probably dead somewhere, you know, like there's probably something real bad going on at that stage. So yeah, you're totally right to hammer this one home. Portability is a huge one. And the other simple last rule, I know I'm talking a lot today.
No, go ahead. That's why we're here, to talk.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that is. I'm going to wax philosophically a tiny bit here. I'm going to go back to like Socrates, like 2,500 years ago. One of the central tenets of this Socratic approach is this idea of earned wisdom versus passive knowledge. And there's this idea as it relates to systems where you can study facts, you can study a system, you can have someone else implement it, but you won't understand that system, number one, or number two, you won't even understand how to run your own business anymore unless you get your hands dirty and use it and learn how to set it up. So there's a crucial difference when it comes to anything in your business and life, but typically, of course, we're talking about systems today, but as it relates to systems, which is a scary word for a lot of business owners, this is very important. If you don't understand how to do everything in your business, when it breaks, you're going to have a huge problem. And this is the difference between being a business owner and being at the mercy of another business owner who knows how to run your business better than you do, or who you depend on entirely for some part of your business. So I just want to talk about that, is this difference between earned wisdom and passive knowledge. Just think about that in your business. A lot of us are always, and I'm the outsourcing delegation guy. I literally ran a VA agency for 10 years. Like, I'm all about delegating stuff in my business. So I share this as a warning from someone who talks about this stuff all day, is if you just, we're all in a hurry to delegate stuff because we don't want to do everything in our business all the time, right? But if you don't understand how to run your business first before you delegate it out or before you automate it with something, you're going to have a really bad time trying to scale that business up. Or when something breaks, and I promise you it will with 100% certainty, when something breaks in your business, you're not going to know how to fix it. And maybe everything else in your business comes to a halt too. So you have to understand what you're trying to accomplish before you buy someone's course or before you buy someone's system or before you start a new software. You need to understand what you want to do before you actually do that. So just put that PSA out there, if you will.
I really do love this topic. So like, I love coaching. I love mentoring. I have a coach. I coach other people. But there's also a reason why they don't necessarily just give you the answer to everything. Or, you know, people ask me stuff all the time. Can I have your blah, blah, blah? I'm like, or they're trying to like, can you give me this? Do you have a playbook for that? Like, and that's great and all. But my processes won't work in someone else's business.
Yes.
It's my business. It's my way of thinking. It's my way of my experience through that. Now, they can be altered and edited and adjusted. But I think that where we see a lot of businesses stall or business owners get frustrated is that they're looking for the easy way out. Like, can I just buy the solution? And I'll be honest, I try to do that too sometimes. Can I just buy the solution? Because I'm frustrated. But we've all learned this, is that you have to experience the pain, like the suck, the struggle, to earn the wisdom to like learn that. Right now in Woot Recruit, I'm back in the ops department, and your statement is really true. I built the first version of Woot Recruit and never went back to ops, because when we started Woot Recruit, it was my process. At that time, co-founder took it over, made it scalable. And I went and focused on marketing and vision and that kind of stuff. And I've never been back to the ops department. And I call it founder mode. Like, I have to go back in and to the trenches and get my hands dirty. And because I'd said, man, I haven't been in the ops department in years. For us to scale this to the next level, I really have to understand what the heck we're doing in there. I don't even know what we're doing in there. because it's not, I know what the original version looked like and what we used to do, but it's Paul was running it and my husband took over ops and now we have someone else running ops. And I'm like, no, I need to go back to founder mode. I was reading an article from the CEO of Airbnb and he had to, you know, he was going back into founder mode into the ops department because if something was broken. And until you can learn it and understand it, you can't fix it.
Yep. Very well said.
And no, I don't want to be in the ops department right now, but it's what the business needs.
Yeah, it's not fun, but it's always enlightening when you go back.
You're like, why are we doing this? Or you find great things. Like, I have a great team, but they don't have the wisdom. They're not the entrepreneur. They can take our simple systems and continue to run it, but they can't fix the things that are broken necessarily.
Right. Just like we sometimes need an outside pair of eyes to come and look at our business and tell us what's wrong with it, so too do the people that we put in certain positions in our business. We have to check in on them occasionally and give our perspective. It could be a consultant's perspective, I don't know, but they also need a perspective outside of their own once you've delegated that department to them. I went through the same thing last year too. We were revamping our hiring process and at my VA agency, and I came in like gung-ho, like, let's do this, I want to get involved again. And I started saying things like, let's do this, this, and this. And they were like, oh, we haven't done that in 4 years. What are you talking about? And I was like, oh, I'm embarrassed. I thought we were doing that the whole time. Why did we stop doing that? You know? And we started doing it again, and it was great. But you know, like, you just don't know when you're so uninvolved.
No, and what I've seen in both my cleaning company here lately and in some of the softwares is that we stopped doing some of the really simple things, and you automatically think something's broken and I need to go buy something or sign up for another course or we need another automation. But when I got back in there, I was like, wait, we got away from some of these really great, simple processes. Why did we stop doing them? And it's just natural drift. I don't think anyone does it on purpose. It's a natural drift in business. And we think we need a new solution. Read another book. Read my book though, when it comes out, read another book or sign up for like another automation or software. Or like, and I've noticed that we have drifted from like just very simple things. And my mission this year is to go back to basics in business, like just deliver a really great service. Who cares about automations? Who cares about certain, like just a really great service? And let's go back to the things that we used to do when we were small.
We're totally on the same wavelength here. I got two quick thoughts for you. So if I may coach the coach for 5 seconds, I like what you said. We're talking really about the difference between getting results versus feeling productive. We as business owners like to feel busy and productive, but we need to remind ourselves that the important thing is to get the results, right? So that's the first thought. Second one was just, Libby, we are totally on the same page here. Like, this is the exact same direction that I'm going in my coaching and the way that I teach people and impart knowledge to them. I used to do like walkthroughs and set it up for them and show them how to use it. But now it's really like a teaching tool, and we will get there and they will learn so much more along the way. And it's a totally different way of working with other business owners. And I prefer it much more because I can see them understanding much more how to work with their businesses and how to progress through these different sticking points that they're hitting. Before, I would almost do it for them in a way, like, because I wanted good value for money, right, when they were paying me. But now I'm like, no, we're going to sit down and we're going to go back to the foundations. And I know this is your goal to go remote in 3 months, but we're going to spend the next 3 months working on your foundations. And then maybe we'll talk about that. Like, I will bring them back to really basic stuff and work on this for a long time sometimes, but you can literally see every month this person evolving. And it's a wonderful thing to see.
And I love that topic. I think, and I didn't have a core understanding of this until, you know, a few years ago, is that there's all kinds of coaching, but in business, there's really three types of coaching. There is the business model, right? That's the core foundation of the business. It's how the business runs. And then there is leadership coaching. It's how do I show up as a leader? And then there is, you could call it like personal coaching or life coaching. Who do I need to be for this business? And I think we all, we try to buy the solution for the business model. Like, let me buy like the solution, but they don't ever implement it. We don't ever implement it to its fullest or make it our own. And then we go straight to like, now I need to be a great leader. Let me get some leadership coaching. And then they struggle with that. And then they're like, you know, very few people go to the personal coaching because they stay at like that leadership. They think it's leadership, and leadership is very important. I think I did it the opposite. I got my business model down, and then I went straight to who do I need to be so that I can show up that way as a leader. And I think a lot of people don't like the business model coaching because it's boring. Right? It's not the sexy part of business. It's like the implementation. It's kind of like, it's the boring, where the innovation and ideation is like fun and exciting, and it's ideas. And most of the time we don't want to do the boring stuff as entrepreneurs. But if you have that core foundation, we've all already paid for it. Somewhere, somehow you have a core foundation to your business, whether you bought it from a course, you bought it from somebody, you have it. And my mission in life is like addition through subtraction. Like, yeah. I don't need to give you more stuff to do. Like, let's go and pull out that course that you bought. Let's go finish implementing it. Like, or capture your core model, because you have something, you just may not have it documented. And then we can focus on who do you need to be. So funny, I was having dinner with someone, and this is a common theme, especially in residential cleaning. A couple people were like, Libby, they don't need me in the office no more. I don't know what to do with my time. I keep going in there and I get like, they tell me to leave. I go in there and I cause disruption because I'm bored. And I'm like, this is your time to work on you so that you can show up as a leader to lead these people, like through the, you know, through war if you need to. But most people don't work on themselves.
No, it's a last thing we work on usually. Gosh.
Yeah.
I see the same thing a lot through my VA agency, because people would hire us as office support so that they could take a vacation or become an absentee owner or go travel or whatever. But I would notice, and I'd have to talk with them, some of them sometimes, because they were like semi harassing our VAs. And I say this jokingly, but
yeah.
IRS
kind of like the lady that follows you around while you're cleaning, and yes, you're like, stop exactly. Following me while I'm cleaning.
Exactly. It. And you have to say, hey, like, you're paying us a lot of money to manage your business. You have to go and relax now. Like, take it down a notch, chill, do like a worksheet if you need to figure out what to do with your time now, because they've gone from 10-hour days to 4-hour days. Mm-hmm. And that's a big shift in a month or two. Like, that's psychologically, that's an enormous shift in your life. Like, a lot of people will promise that, but when you actually go through that experience, it is disconcerting to then think about what to do with your time. And I'll tell you a danger here. I don't know if you'll agree or not. There's different types of business owners. There's the growth business owner. Then there's the work-life balance, which is like my kind of crew. But what I perceive to be a danger is when people finally get an office team and they get a lot of their time back, they immediately default to taking the extra 6 hours a day that they got back and just go back into pumping it into growth. They're marketing again, they're doing sales again, they're trying to grow the business again. Like, okay, we're doing 3 million, can we get to 5 million this year? There's nothing wrong with that in theory. But if you've just paid an office team to manage most of your day for you, and then you go back up to a 10-hour day again, that I think is something you should pause and think about very deeply before you do it. Because I notice a lot of people, they tell me their life goals, they tell me what they want out of the business, but then when they are actually free to do something else, they just immediately default to trying to grow the business again instead of trying to do the other things that they were dreaming about when they were in the position where they didn't have the team to handle it. So just a reflection to think about it before you go back into growth mode.
So I love this, because someone literally said to me, I don't know what I was doing. Oh, I traveled Mexico for 26 days. 26 days we were in Mexico. We traveled all around, just me and my husband. No kids. We didn't hardly work. We did a little bit of like planning, like bigger vision planning, like talking and, you know, that kind of planning. But one of my friends said, Libby, how do you not feel guilty that you're not in the day to day? And I think that either there's guilt, like, oh my God, I was working 10 hours. I need to work 10 hours somewhere else. Right. And so let me, like you said, jump back in there and do more. There's guilt. Or where this goes like even deeper, they don't want to do the self work. They cannot be alone with their own thoughts or in quiet spaces because they need to do the self work. But a lot of us, at least I did for many years, avoided it like the plague, like at all costs. I didn't want to talk about it. I didn't want to think about it. But that but that in fact is what was keeping me small and keeping me the bottleneck of the business. And right now I have a coach, and this coach is paid. He's paid high dollars, and he is not, he's like, Libby, I don't care about any of your businesses. It's like, I only care about you. It's like, who do you need to be? What do we need to, he references athletes. So he's like, he's an ex sports coach. Who do you need to be? We need to work you out, condition, like, and it's not working out. It's approaching leadership and life and personal growth like an athlete. And he's like, I don't care about your business. This is all about you. Who do you need to be? How do you need to show up? Who are like, and yeah, we talk about some numbers, but we don't get into the minutia of the business. It's more about supporting me and my role. And for me, that's been great. And I've never had a coach like this before, where it's all the focus is on me. It's somewhat uncomfortable. And, you know, you have access to him 24/7. How's it going? Like, what, you know, and it's somewhat uncomfortable because it's almost like you feel guilty, or you're not worthy of like that much time or attention from somebody. But I really do think as a business owner, we struggle with that guilt. Like, oh my God, I need to be there every day. Or, hey, I don't want to face that hard thing.
I've got a reflection for you here. So, two things. You're going to discover, because you're growing bigger now, you're going to discover there's a stage beyond managing the managers where you're going to have to decide, Libby, if you need to hire an outside CEO to make the business progress further. This is the last bottleneck for business owners who want to continue down the growth path, like forever, until they have a huge exit, is they need to learn that they're not even the right person to be CEO anymore. So they have to learn to replace themselves. They have to learn.
I've done that in some.
Oh, okay. So yeah. You've been through this. Because that's a big, that's
we've been
a big
through that.
One.
And then we've been through that. And then yesterday we talked about hiring myself a chief of staff for Libby.
That's great. Yeah.
He's like, I'm not there yet. But he's President like, Libby. Well, if you don't do that, you won't get to where you're trying to go.
Yeah. It's a humbling thing. I mean, it's exciting, but it's a humbling thing to have like that really senior management team be built up. I want to share one thing with you, if that's okay, that I think really speaks to what you're talking about with the guilt. So my ZenMade presentation is very different than I'm doing the ZenMade Summit thing this year again.
Me too.
I saw you on the page, the speaker page. My topic is very different this year. It's usually on delegation or VAs or going remote. I'm doing a very different one this year on Zen wisdom for cleaning business owners. And a part
I saw that.
Yeah. And a part of it I'll just share here. It's a tiny little part of it. But it's an interesting dichotomy that I've noticed in my Zen practice, but then in my cleaning business. Cleaning businesses is to bring joy and peace and organization to our clients, but running it is very chaotic, right? And one thing I've noticed is a meditative philosophical type of practice is usually centered around balance and stillness. And a lot of us talk about wanting this type of thing. We need to meditate more. We need to be more mindful. We need less things to do, right? But the very operating system that an entrepreneur runs on, our lifeblood is progress and action and energy, right? And always moving forward and never giving up, which is the direct-
We're adrenaline junkies.
Right. We are junkies of progress and change, right? Which is fine. I am too. But it's the direct opposite of stillness and calm and control and poise that we want secretly inside, right? So part of what I talk about is this strange dichotomy and how to balance this stillness and action as an entrepreneur in your cleaning business. So if you can achieve this balance, all of this guilt that we're talking about will go away, because your perspective on how you manage your business and yourself will radically change, and you won't have to give up any growth. It's just a different way of viewing and a different way of acting in your business as an owner. You don't always have to be progress oriented. You can pause for a minute and reflect and change and then get going again. It doesn't always have to be go, 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 right? So just wanted to mention that because it's an interesting topic on my mind recently.
Yeah. I have to give it back to Dan Martell. I was in his boardroom group before he exited. And one of his things that he just drilled into us was, We used to call it the woo-woo work. As a group, we were like, oh, he brought us another woo-woo exercise. And he would bring us the most interesting people. So we would meet together once a quarter, and it was like a day and a half of learning, and then a day of adventure. I don't remember. Maybe it was a day of learning, and then a day of adventure, and then a day of self-work. So like, day of learning, and then one day, then the next day we'd go like rappel off the side of a building,
Ooh.
Like eat fire, like scary things on purpose. But he always brought us at the end some sort of mindful exercise. I have done so many things that I would never have tried ever, but now I love them. From meditation to like certain breathing to we can name, I mean, sound baths, and like we can just go on and on and on with what Dan brought us. But more than the teaching, those things changed my life. They changed how I think about myself, this mindful work, the Zen work, you could call it.
Yes.
It changed who I was. I became a better parent. Like that's probably the best thing that changed was my marriage with my husband and how I parent my children. The byproduct was it made me a better leader in the business.
Oh, that's lovely. You brought it right back to personal. That's very cool. I've heard a lot. I've never worked with him, but I've heard a lot about Dan Martell over the years. So,
Well,
I think
he exited. He's out. He doesn't do it no more.
Oh, he's gone? Okay. I may be remembering incorrectly. I think Amar might have been in that for a while, wasn't he? Or, okay, it was.
Armar was in SAS Academy, and then he had another level called Boardroom, which is where we did the learning scary woo-woo stuff.
Oh, okay. Okay, got it. So that's the why the way he's the way he is. I see. That explains a lot.
But yeah, Amar was in SAS Academy. That's where I got to know Amar on a personal level, because we would go to the SAS Academy learnings and see.
Oh.
I saw met his team and him a few times. I've since exited. I'm on a different journey this year. I'm trying to stop learning. Not because I know everything. I think we have seasons in our life of like learning and resting and like implementation or doing. And I'm in the season of doing. I have spent years and years and years learning, consuming content. We're like digital junkies. And it's my turn to actually take action, like do the things that I've put off, implement the things I've learned, and actually like ha see execution and progress, not necessarily growth, but see the like progress and implementation of the things that we've learned.
I love it. And what you'll discover, even if the number doesn't grow, is there's this concept of hidden progress, which is kind of happening behind the scenes too. Like if you're working out, sometimes you're stuck on the same number of reps and weight if you're weightlifting, but there's actually a lot of progress happening in the background. Your neuromuscular system's becoming more efficient, your form is getting better. All of this stuff is actually improving, but you can't see it. So I bet what you'll be finding is a lot of stuff is happening in the background. It might just not show immediately, and then suddenly it's all going to come together.
The first thing we've noticed is culture, like our team, is amazing. It's been absolutely amazing because you're involved a little bit more, like you're implementing. And then you're delegating it to people. And I'm seeing people in our team rise up that I was like, oh my God, I could have got this done 10 times faster. If we like, if you would have, taken action, made it a priority, and then coached certain team members through, like, hey, we're going to create an app for this software and you're going to run it. And here's how we're going to do it. And they got it done 500 times faster than I would have ever, like, if I would have kept leading it.
How validating is that?
So any last words? We've been on for an hour almost. It goes fast.
I apologize. No, I threw us down a few different pathways here. I don't know.
So
I
what's
don't.
next for you then?
Sure. Two things are next for me. Family life is starting, so be more on that soon. No announcements yet. Yes, but
I have three children you could practice with if you need any practice.
Oh, well, Well, if they ever need a home today, there's always a home in Japan.
Oh, don't say that, because my two older boys would be there in 5 seconds.
Oh no, have I just doomed myself to? So in the business world, there is a couple things next. I'll keep it brief. So what I for people who don't know, I don't really advertise it. It's really mostly small groups and one-on-one. There's no Facebook campaigns or anything about it. But the last few years, I've ran something called the Local Business MBA program that takes people through different stages of their business, through launch, through systemizing it, scaling it up, building an office team. There's these different crucial stages that you go through in your business. And I coach people at those stages to get to the next stage. So for me, I've always done this part-time because I've been focused on the cleaning business and the VA agency. I'm going into coaching more full-time. It's something that I felt strongly about for a couple years now, but it just kept kind of putting on the back burner for whatever reason. So this year and next year for me is all about expanding that program and expanding the amount of people that I can help through that. So the main thing that I'm going to be doing is really expanding Local Business MBA for people. And the other thing is just giving my time to a lot of people who need it. So I'm changing the way that I teach people and what I teach from just tactics or just starting to a lot more work-life balance stuff, to a lot more what do we want out of life. I don't want to call it life coaching because it's not that. It's very practical business coaching still, but it's blended with other parts of our life. It's kind of like the whole mind, body, spirit thing. You can't just take one part of a person and work on that. You have to understand and work on the whole person. And I believe that's true of our businesses too. So the way that I'm coaching and offering my time to people is very different too. I don't have a specific neat little answer for you, but that's kind of what's next.
No,
for
that's
me.
Great. No, I love that. And so a question, do you own any of your cleaning businesses still, or have you sold all of them? Have you exited all of them?
So I had three and I sold them all last year.
Okay. Yeah. So you are totally free
for a tiny bit of time. So, I've been thinking about starting a paper for a while. So I'm pausing on it because like we talked about earlier, there's the urge to just go do something else. Right. But it's been on my mind to do the whole painting thing and the other niches. So I actually help people start a number of different home service businesses, not just cleaning, roofing, lawn care, painting, but myself, I've always ran cleaning companies. So I kind of have this itch, like to prove myself almost, if you will, that I can do it in other niches too. So there's this part of me that wants to explore a little bit and play around with the early stage of a few different types of home service businesses. So nothing yet, but maybe soon.
But maybe soon. Well, awesome. This was a great conversation, Chris. Thank you for joining us. And we'll make sure to add Chris's information so that you can find him on social media to the show notes. And again, I want to thank you for being a guest on the Libby Delusion podcast.
Thank you so much for hosting me. It's always a pleasure, Libby. All right. Take care, everyone. Bye.
Hiring sucks, right? Sorting through bad applications, ghosted interviews, and wasted time. It's all exhausting. That's why we built WooRecruit, the hiring system designed to attract and convert the right people for your business fast. What are some of the benefits? Well, you get more qualified applicants without lifting a single finger. Increase your show rate, eliminate the worry of ghosting. Track every single step of our process with real-time data. If you're tired of hiring headache, go to WootRecruit.com and let us start filling your open roles today.